माधवा कुंजा बिहारी बीजन वल्ला भा गिरे बीजन वल्ला गिरे बारदारी यशोदा नंदा गज जनरानी यशोदा नंदा गज जनरानी यमुना तीरा बंध चाहरी यमुना तीरा बंध चाहरी जय राधा मदन कुंजा बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंजा बिहारी जन बल्ला गिरे बारे जन बल्ला गिरे बारे यशोदा गज जन रानी यशोदा गज जन रानी यमुना तीरा चरि यमुना तीरा हरि राधा माधवा हरि जय राधा माधवा कुंजा बिहारी जय राधा माधवा कुंजा बिहारी
जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिभाषाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतीश श्रीनाथ श्री भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी महाराष्ट्र प्रभु विष्णु विष्णुपाद अष्टोत्तर शतीश श्रीनाथ चिर भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज ठाकुर प्रभुपाद की स्वामी विधि गांडाचार्य श्री प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव बिंद की नमाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की सद गोस्वामी की प्रेम सिंह श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्य आनंद श्री अद्वैत राधा शिवाचारि गौर भक्त बिंद की शिशि राधा कृष्ण गोपीना श्याम कुंद राधा कुंद गिरी गोवर्धन की वृंदावन धाम की मायापुर धाम की गंगमयी की यमुना मई की तुलसी देवी की भक्ति देवी की श्याम भक्त बिंद की श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की बेहद विदंग की पिताई गौरपनंदी गौरी सुधी समृद्धि होती सौ गौरी सुधी समृद्धि होती सौ गौरी सुधी समृद्धि О, говорите, Шигуру, Шигуран. Ом намо Бхагавате Васудевая. Ом намо Бхагавате Васудевая. Ом намо Бхагавате Васудевая. And today reading from 11th canto, 12th chapter, text number 11. I was thinking it would be 12, but anyway, so. It's 12. Okay. First I'd like to express it's my honor and pleasure to be here with all the Vaishnavas at the lotus feet of Shri Radha Shyama Sundar, Shri Krishna Balaram, Shri Gaurinitai. I hope that I can say something meaningful, you know, for the pleasure of the Vaishnavas. Ta na bidan mai anusanga badha dhiya svam atmanam adas patidam yata samadau munayo abditoye nadya pravishta eva nama rupe Nai vidan mai anusangha badha Vyasvam atmanam adrastatiram Yata samadha muni obditoye Madhyada pravishta eva nama rupe Na vidan mayanu sangha badha Diya swamat manam adhas tatidam Ta samadha muni abhitoye Naja pavishta iva nama rupe
Yeah.
Gopis.
Not
Abhidhan
were
aware of Mayi
in
me
Anusanga
by intimate contact Bada
bound up
Dhyā
their
consciousness
Swam
their own
Atmanam
body
or self
Ada,
something
remote.
Tata,
thus
considering.
Idam,
this
which is most near.
Tata,
just
as.
Samado,
in
yoga
samadhi.
Munaya,
great
sages
of the
ocean.
Toye.
In the
water,
Nadya,
rivers,
Havista,
having
entered,
Iba,
like,
Nama,
names,
Rupe,
and
forms.
Translation
and purport
by the
servants of
Srila Prabhupada.
My
dear Uddhava,
just
as great sages
in
yoga trance
merge
into self-realization
like
rivers
merging
into the
ocean
and
are thus
not aware
of
material
names
and forms.
Similarly,
the gopis
of Vrindavan
were so
completely
attached to
me
within
their minds
that they could
not think
of their own
bodies
or of
this world
or
of their
future lives.
Their
entire
consciousness
was simply
bound up
in me.
Everyone
can please repeat.
My dear
Uddhava,
just
as great
sages in
yoga trance
merge
into
self-realization
like rivers merging
into
the ocean
and
are thus
not
aware
of
material
names
and forms.
Similarly,
the
gopis of
Vrindavan
were
so completely attached
to me
within
their minds
that they
could not think
of their own
bodies
or
of this
world
or
of their
future
lives.
Their
entire
consciousness
was
simply
bound up
in me.
Purport.
The
words
Swan
Atmanam
Adastatidam
indicate
that
while for
ordinary
persons
one's
personal
body
is
the
most near
and dear
thing,
the
gopis
considered
their own
bodies
to be
distant
and
remote,
just
as a yogi
in samadhi
trance,
considers
ordinary
things
around
his physical
body
or his
physical body
itself
to
be
most
remote.
When
Krishna
played on
his flute
late at
night,
the
gopis
immediately
forgot
everything
about
their
so-called
husbands
and
children
and
went to
dance
with
Lord Krishna
in
the forest.
These
controversial
points
have
been clearly
explained
in
the
book Krishna
by
His
Divine
Grace A.C.
Bhaktivedanta
Swami
Prabhupada.
The
basic
explanation
is
that
Lord
Krishna
is
the source
of
everything
and
the
gopis
are
the
Lord's
own
potency.
Thus, There is no discrepancy or immorality in the Almighty Personality of Godhead's loving affairs with His own manifest potency, the gopis, who happen to be the most beautiful young girls in the creation of God. There is no illusion on the part of the gopis, for they are so attracted to Lord Krishna that they do not care to think of anything else. Since all existence is situated within the body of Lord Krishna, there is no loss for the gopis when they concentrate on the Lord. It is the nature of very deep love to exclude all objects except the beloved. However, in the material world, where we try to love a limited temporary object, such as our nation, family, or personal body, our exclusion of other objects constitutes ignorance. But when our love is intensely concentrated on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the origin of everything, such concentration cannot be considered ignorance or small-mindedness. The example of the sages in Samadhi is given here only to illustrate exclusive concentration on a single object. Otherwise, there is no comparison between the ecstatic love of the gopis and the dry meditation of the yogis, who merely try to understand that they are not their material bodies. Since the gopis had no material bodies to become detached from and were personally dancing with and embracing the absolute truth, one can never compare the exalted position of the gopis to that of mere yogis. It is stated that the bliss of the impersonal Brahman realization cannot be compared to even an atomic fragment of the blissful ocean of love of Krishna. Intimate attachment is like a strong rope that binds the mind and heart. In material life, we are bound to that which is temporary and illusory, and therefore such binding of the heart causes great pain. However, if we bind our minds and hearts to the eternal Lord Krishna, the reservoir of all pleasure and beauty, then our hearts will expand unlimitedly in the ocean of transcendental bliss. One should understand that the gopis were not in any way inclined toward impersonal meditation, in which one denies the reality of variegated creation. The gopis did not deny anything. They simply loved Krishna and could not think of anything else. They only rejected whatever impeded their concentration on Lord Krishna, cursing even their own eyelids, which blinked and thus removed Krishna from their sight for a split second. Srila Rupa Goswami has stated that all sincere devotees of the Lord should have the courage to remove from their lives anything that impedes their progressive march back home, back to Godhead. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadatmayam Dadati Shva Patantika. So this verse is very instructive, especially a very instructive purport. So I would like to go over some of the points in the purport, starting with the last part, which is the first part of the verse. Speaking about great sages whose intense meditation is so great that they forget about the names and the forms of this world. In the second canto of the Bhagavatam, there's one verse that says that the names and the forms of this world are just ropes that tie us and attach us to all the different objects and things that have no meaning. No. Of course, the name and form of Krishna is what we're searching for, what we're begging for. So, um, here in the purport, it says that there's really no comparison. The comparison, this is a comparison where the negative part is valid, but the positive part is not valid. Otherwise, if you try to make the meditation of the yogis equal or somehow even close to that of the gopis, it's just, there's no scope for that. But there is a similarity, and that's why it's given here. And of course, two paragraphs, the first paragraph that deals with this says that that the gopis, they can't be compared to the sages, nor, and the second paragraph, that they have no inclination. So dealing with the first point, that what can a great sage actually achieve? Detachment from this world, and in the best of cases, attachment to Paramatma. Even Lord Brahma said that Pantas tu koti shatabat sarya sampagamyo vayor tapi manasa munipungavana, that even great jnanis and yogis, they meditate for thousands and hundreds of thousands of years in different yugas. But yopyasti yat prapara sim nyavichitya tatve, they can only approach the effulgence that's coming from the tips of the toes. And maybe some of them can get to the tip of the toe of the Supreme Personality of God. So what to speak of the gopis? Even in the 10th canto, in the 9th chapter, one verse, gopyan vadanam nayam apa yoginam, that this gopi, meaning Mother Yashoda, running after Krishna with a stick, has gone beyond these yogis, shamam pravishtum taparasaritam manaha, whose minds are so disciplined and totally focused on the Supreme Absolute Truth, but they can't achieve it. But Mother Yashoda, with a little stick running behind Krishna with her heavy hips, can achieve Krishna so quickly. So this is the great fortune. Not only that, but later on in that chapter, it says that, what is that binding force? What is that which connects Mother Yashoda or the devotees to Krishna? Tvam sadashina tvangam harina vritya vashyata. That vritya vashyata. Krishna comes under the control of his devotees so easily. Krishna comes, he wants to be under the control of his devotees. He would like to be under the control of everyone, but as he says in the 5th canto, that I can give anything, and I can give liberation, but to give myself to someone, only to my pure devotee, because I have to come under their control. So it's a very, very special position. And then swa vashinati krishna, that Krishna is totally he's totally in control of himself. Yasya idam, he's totally in control of the universe. Shasheshvaram, he's in control of all the demigods. Vashe, but he's under the control of his devotees. So how powerful is a devotee? How wonderful is the position of a devotee? Because we're not necessarily talking about Bhakta Jan or so and so, but we're talking about someone who has surrendered to Krishna. This whole part of the Bhagavatam started out by saying that how fortunate are the residents of Vrindavan, and now in these verses it's focusing on the gopis, that they're super excellent position. But even Mother Yashoda, was in such a super excellent position that, no, Neman Benincho na Brahma, that not Brahma, not Shiva, no, na Shir Rup Janga Sam Shayam, and not even the Goddess of Fortune, who is the better half. Now, how is the Goddess of Fortune the better half of Vishnu? Because she's softer. No, Vishnu, he's got, you know, four weapons, or two weapons and two arms for blessing. So, you know, he can be strict. No, Krishna has a flute, but even the better, she can't understand, even though she tried to understand Krishna. She can't understand Krishna. But prasadam lebhide gopi. But this gopi, no, this gopi, Mother Yashoda, she is in such a special position. No. And then Shukadeva Goswami goes on to say a famous verse, no? Naham Sukapo Bhagavan, that Dehinam Kupika Sutaha, that there is no one can achieve the happiness or the fortunate position that Mother Yashoda has achieved. Dehinam, not those who are embodied, or normal people, karma yogis, people like that. Gyaninam, cha atmabhutanam, not great great gyanis, learned persons, not great yogis. Yata bhakti matam iha. There is no comparison to the love that Krishna's devotees, especially personified by Mother Yashoda, that can exhibit in this world. So such a special position, and this verse is saying that, first of all, these yogis and these jnanis, no, they don't even compare. But it is good to understand detachment, but we don't want their type of detachment. No. We don't want detachment that comes from severe austerities and penances, which Rupa Goswami says makes the heart grow very hard. You know? So, because it creates pride. You know? Pride comes in. When one is very, very concentrated on doing something externally rather than internally, then the second point about this particular aspect of the verse, that we should understand that the gopis had no inclination for such activities as meditation. In the famous 13th chapter of Madhya Lila, when Lord Jagannath, as Krishna in Kurukshetra, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Srimati Radharani in Kurukshetra, and there's conversing. And then she says, so Krishna says, which is there in the Bhagavatam, if you want to meditate on me and you understand that I am the Supreme, just meditate on me as the Super Soul in your hearts. No. And Radharani immediately says, this is unacceptable. First of all, from my point of view, no, almost everyone, their mind and their heart are the same. No, because wherever their mind goes, their heart goes. No, generally speaking, we follow our minds, and their heart follows right behind. But she says, but my heart, unfortunately, can never leave Vrindavan. So I can't bring my, you know, even though my mind is here seeing you in this chariot and, you know, with a helmet and elephants and soldiers, my heart, I can't. Because she was anticipating, because she would say, if you want to be with me, come to Dwarka. No, I can make you a palace. I've already made 16,108. I can make another palace. And even if all the gopis come, I can make that many palaces. No, my heart cannot leave Vrindavan. Therefore, it's absurd that you say for me to meditate on you. And then what to speak of the gopis? No, already you've broken their hearts, because the only thing they want is your lotus feet. No, and they've already achieved that. They're already meditating on you. And as far as me, personally, I've been trying to forget you, and I can't do it. So what's the use of meditating on you to remember you, if I can't forget you? No. So there's no way. that there is any inclination, you know. So then going back to the beginning of the purport, you know, that some points here. Of course, up to now, I tried to give a few examples of Mother Yashoda's supreme. Mother Yashoda has something very special about her love for Krishna, you know. And in the Damodar Lila, this is exhibited, that she has the ability to bring Krishna in a very special way, to meditate on Krishna in a very special way. And her love for Krishna is unbelievable in that special way. But the gopis, their love for Krishna manifests in a little different way. You know? And now here, Krishna is instructing Uddhava about the gopis, which might seem, in one sense, redundant, because Uddhava already had such a realization of the gopis. His realization was that he said that these gopis, their love for Govinda is unparalleled. No, it's so unparalleled that there is no embodied being who can even come close. Not those who want materialistic life, not even great sages, and what to speak of ourselves. No one can even come close. So what is the use of having a position of a Brahman or even the position of Lord Brahma? These things are all external. Otherwise, saying all these positions, all these, just as we're saying here, names and forms that we have in this world are ultimately superfluous. They have no depth. When I see these gopis and their love for Krishna, anybody's position, you know, because Uddhava was basically saying that before meeting these gopis, I was thinking that we, the residents of Dwarka, that we have a very special position. We're always with Krishna. No, we're very special. Of course, later on he said to Vidura that I think Kamsa is more fortunate than we are. He was always meditating on Krishna. We take Krishna for granted. No, we go home at night and we think about our families. And of course, that's not true. They were always thinking about Krishna. No. But you know, Kamsa, he couldn't forget about Krishna for one moment. Of course, this is another way of explaining what is emphasized in the previous verse and also mentioned here, that the gopis, they just can't, or the gopis, the residents of Vrindavan, no, they can't think of anything else. And it's not negligence. Just like, you know, Srila Prabhupada mentioned many times that a devotee must be daksha or dukkha, as he would say, no, very expert. Not that now I'm a devotee and I can be negligent. No. So one may think, well, wait a minute, what about the gopis? You know, they're really spaced out. You know, they forget about their husbands, they forget about their family, they forget about so many things. No. So, you know, therefore I can justify my forgetfulness of not being dutiful. Not, you know, I'm just absorbed. Well, of course, it's, you know, deities are so beautiful. The holy name is so wonderful. One can, even Srila Prabhupada defended one brahmachari who was distributing in Kmart lot. You know, that famous little article is there in our Science of Self-Realization. Prabhupada defended him. He said, yeah, he was negligent. There's no doubt about it. I'm sorry about that. But he's absorbed in Krishna. No. He's absorbed in Krishna. No. One time, one of the leaders complained about, you know, the brahmacharis being so a little spaced out, forgetful. And Prabhupada said, that is the price of celibacy. No. So, you know, working hard on one thing, you may be a little negligent on another thing. But the gopis, their position is, they're not, and that was the second paragraph here, that there's no illusion, there's no negligence. Because Someone else may be small-minded. You know, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives an example in this regard, that possessiveness is very strong. So someone may have a son or a daughter or a relative who's a little errant, who's a little, you know, maybe even a criminal-minded. And he gives the example of the moon, but I was thinking of another example. Just like you may know a very upstanding citizen who does everything right, who follows all the laws, who's very polite, and you may have a son or a brother or some that, you know, is not following the law and doing all kinds of nasty things. But will you have more affection for this upstanding citizen that lives next door, or for your son, or for your relative? Naturally. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, this is possessiveness. And the gopis' possessiveness of Krishna includes everything. And therefore, this paragraph is based on that. That yes, if you become too absorbed, like nowadays, people with their cell phones or their internet or whatever, so, you know, I see people practically, well, you know, so many car accidents are attributed to cell phone use and, you know, people, family units break apart due to the internet. Everybody just goes off and goes to their little screen, whether it be a phone or a computer, and their family unit's not there anymore. No. So this type of limited concentration on something and being negligent of something else that may be more important is certainly ignorance. But the gopis being totally focused on Krishna, it includes everything. No. It includes everything. The great sages, Shukadev Goswami, Parikshit Maharaj, anyone who reads the Bhagavatam, especially the Bhagavatam explained by the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, is going to be totally fascinated by the love of the gopis and simply wanting. And even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, the best way to worship Krishna is in the same mood of the gopis. No. The best way. There's no better way. And what is that way? Total absorption in Krishna. Therefore, this total absorption in Krishna is not limitation. It is guiding all of us to the proper way to relate to the Supreme Personality of God. And so the gopis, no. Then there's another point here that, you know, it's made in the first paragraph about the gopis' supposed immoral behavior. No. One time Srila Prabhupada was on a train, and one man, you know, nice gentleman. So I don't know if it was a sincere question or a, you know, it was probably, you know, like trying to justify his sense gratification or his maya or his understanding. So he asked Srila Prabhupada, you are a devotee of Krishna, so why is it, Swamiji, that Krishna is stealing others' wives? No. And Prabhupada said, no. Krishna is Purusha, and everyone is Prakriti. Therefore, everyone belongs to Krishna. Therefore, everyone is Krishna's wife. It is you who is stealing the wives of Krishna. No. You have a wife, you stole from Krishna. No. Well, you're the rascal. No, don't think that Krishna's the rascal. So this is the point. No. And Uddhava, as he was realizing the greatness of the gopis, he said that who can understand these gopis who are apparently vyabhichar dushta? They apparently are deviating from moral principles. No, apparently. But, no. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives three examples of unchaste women. No. The first one is a woman who is attached to her husband and relates to him, and attached to her lover and relates to him. She's considered the most unchaste because she's not faithful to anyone. Then there's the woman who is forgets about her husband and goes with her lover. So at least she sticks to one person. So she's a little better. But the best is the one who rejects her husband and becomes totally attached to the Supreme Personality of God. And I'm not recommending something here, you know, everybody. But, you know, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, so we have to take it. Apparently, she is also immoral, you know, according to mundane dharma. You know. But because she has become attached, and of course, the best example of that, someone who also becomes so absorbed in Krishna that they become negligent to their own duties, the wives of the Brahmins. You know. The wives of the Brahmins, they'd never seen Krishna. They had only heard from flower persons who sold flowers in Vrindavan and came by, and they heard about Krishna, and they developed such attachment and love for Krishna that when Krishna and Balaram told his friends, go to the Brahmins and get some, you know, something for us to eat, they went to the Brahmins, and the Brahmins looked at them, like, scourgingly, what are you doing here? We're doing a sacrifice. And then one of Krishna's friends said, but actually at this point in the sacrifice, you can stop and give remnants. They were a little, a little astounded. How does this cowherd boy know this? But then they just went back to their jagya. Don't bother us. So then they came back dejected, disappointed. And Krishna said, go to the wives, but don't even tell them. Just tell them that Krishna and Balaram are here. Don't even tell them we're hungry. And just tell them we're here. And when they did that, never seen Krishna, no. They came running, in the same way that the gopis go running to Krishna, without being properly dressed, without being properly, have their hair arranged or anything. They just ran out. They brought all kinds of foodstuffs automatically, They knew when you come to Krishna, just like Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that whenever one comes to see the deity, one must bring a gift. No. And if one has no gift, at least one should offer a prayer. No. In glorification of the Supreme Personality of God. No. Of course, we come and we offer the Maha Mantra. No. At least. But if you can bring a gift, that's even better. No. So they knew, Krishna and Balaram, we have to bring something. No. And they brought. And then when they saw Krishna standing there with his arm on the shoulder of a friend, twirling a lotus flower and smiling, they forgot about everything. They forgot about the food. They forgot about approaching Krishna. And they just drank Krishna's beauty through their eyes into their hearts. So this is being absorbed in Krishna. No. They abandoned their, and they were ready to go. They were ready to go with Krishna. They said, so Krishna, our fervent prayer is that you take us back to Vrindavan with you. And they were ready to just forget about these Brahmin husbands. You know? And then Krishna said, no, that wouldn't be proper. And they said, oh, we understand. You have your gopis. We can stay just on the outside. And you can come see us whenever, you get a chance. And Krishna said, no, this also is not proper. Better that you hear and chant about my glories and remember me in that way. This is the most proper. So therefore, husbands, don't worry. I'm not telling your wives to run off with Krishna. But remember, chant his glories. And then you'll always be with Krishna. And you won't create any disturbance, any social disturbance. But the gopis, they couldn't even do that. No, they couldn't even do that. They were willing to risk anything. And therefore, Uddhava goes on. And he says I can't exactly remember the verse, but anyway, I won't repeat. Just for time's sake, I won't repeat the verse. Oh, it's a very beautiful verse. No. Nayam Shionga U. Nitanta Ritanta Raner Prasada. That the goddess of fortune and anyone who is in that way attached to Krishna, they get such great mercy. They get such great mercy. But still, they don't get what's coming next. And what to speak of Swayar Yoshitam, no, that Nalina Gandha Rucham, that the denizens, the lady denizens of heaven, whose bodies have the fragrance and the beauty of the lotus flower, and Kutonya, and what to speak of ordinary materialistic women, who, by material estimation, are very beautiful. You know? Especially if they're, you know, in a nightclub at night or, you know, a long distance away. You know? And they look more beautiful, you know. You get closer, then you see the instruments to try to make one more beautiful. But anyway. But then he says, Rasot Savasya, that Bhujadanda Grihita Kanta. But these gopis, no, the Braja Balabhinam, these gopis, the residents of the forest of Vrindavan, no, who just seem to be simple girls, they have Krishna's in the wonderful, the most wonderful of all festivals, the Rasa dance. Krishna puts his arms around them. The goddess of fortune never gets this. What to speak of anybody else? And then he says his famous verse, that asamaho charanarenu jusham aham syam vindavane kimapi gula latau shadinam, that to get the dust of the lotus feet of these gopis of Vrindavan, I am willing to become a creeper or a bush or any kind of plant in that holy place so that I will get the dust on their heads. I can't aspire for their position, but at least I can get the dust, and then I will be the most fortunate person. Because Yadushyajam, they've given up, no, Swajanam, they've given up their relatives, Aryapatam, Chahitva, they've given up the path of morality. They've given up the family members, no? And to do what? Bejur Makunda Padavim, to worship the lotus feet of Krishna, Shutibir Srimigyam, that even great saintly persons in the Vedas personified are glorifying for thousands and thousands of years. They're so fortunate. Uddhava ends his prayers saying that yes, the goddess of fortune, Brahma, and Shiva, and all these great personalities, they can meditate on Krishna in the mind. But the gopis, they grab Krishna's feet, put it to their chests, and they're relieved from all distress. So this is the position. So Uddhava, first he had this realization, and now Krishna is confirming it to him, that the position of these gopis is wonderful, is beyond explanation. No. And then, I just, maybe I'll conclude here. There's a, it says here that, I think it's here, this purport, that the, I just wanted to read the verse from Rupa Goswami that is referred to here, that it says that this meditation, so Rupa Goswami quotes in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Brahmanando Bhavadesha Chet Parardhidha Gunikrita Naiti Bhakti Sukambodhe Paramano Tulamapi. The bliss of Brahman realization accumulated by samadhi lasting for half of Brahma's life cannot compare to one drop of the ocean of happiness of bhakti. So this is the point that was made, that whatever great personalities these Brahmins and everything can do. Now when Haridas Thakur was, just to conclude, Haridas Thakur was invited by the uncle and father of Raghunath Das Goswami to speak in the assembly of Brahmins about the glories of the holy name. You know? And the Brahman, all those personalities there began to glorify Haridas. And then, some of the Brahmins explained that the holy name is so wonderful that it can relieve us of all sinful activity. And another said, it can give us liberation. And Haridas, he said, actually, that's not the purpose of chanting the holy name. The purpose is to achieve love of God. And so then he explained that when the holy name is even in the beginning stages, when like the sun when it's on the horizon and a little bit of light comes, all darkness, all ghosts, all thieves go away. And in that way, when the holy name comes onto the horizon of the heart, abhijitimera tapana rupi hridgane vidaje, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that all ignorance and all darkness disappears as the holy name rises in the heart. So then one Brahmin there, he said, wait, you know, he said, I don't believe this. Gopal Chakravarti, he said, I don't believe this. No. These great sages are meditating for thousands and millions of years, and you're saying that just by chanting this holy name, you can do better than them? No. I remember once I saw in one yoga magazine, I was just flipping through it, and it said, get this 45-minute tape. You can achieve in these 45 minutes what yogis spent thousands of years meditating on. Of course, it wasn't the Mahamantra. No. But anyway, so, but this is true for the holy name if you chant it properly. No. And so, so Gopal Chakravarti said, you know, I challenge you. Yeah. That you prove to me by Shastra, he's a very proud Brahmin, very beautiful, proud Brahmin. So you prove to me, or else I will cut off your nose. And everybody in the audience was like, their mouths dropped, you know, they were practically ready to pounce on him. And then Haridas said, no, I will show you, and if I can't do it, I'll cut off my own nose. No, you don't even have to bother. And then he quoted, you know, that tut sakshad karana ladha, that when I see this ocean of transcendental bliss, vishuddhabda sthitasyame, and I'm situated in that pure transcendental state of Krishna consciousness by seeing you, my dear Lord, then sukani goshpadhanai parayante, then all the happiness that one can achieve from Brahman realization or even Paramatma realization, is just like the happiness in the footprint of a calf, the water that's contained in the footprint of a calf, compared to the Brahman Yisha Jagat Guru, oh my dear Lord, compared to the transcendental bliss, this Brahman realization or even Paramatma realization of the yogis. It's just insignificant. And then they pounced on Gopal, and kicked him out. And he was dismissed from his service. And 3 days later, his beautiful nose fell off. His beautiful fingers and toes dissolved away by leprosy. And Haridas was actually sad. No. He didn't want him to suffer. This is the nature of a devotee. No. So anyway, this is just another example of how devotional service is so far beyond all these things. And I just wanted to conclude by going back to the last line here. Sri Rupa Goswami has stated that all sincere devotees of the Lord should have the courage to remove from their lives anything that impedes their progressive march back home, back to Godhead. So I remember one time I was doing Japa seminar with Mahatma Prabhu, and he was speaking about this point, and he said, when we pray to Krishna to take away material desires, we can't say, yes, take away material desire, but not this one, and not this one, and not this one. All these other ones that are not so profitable or not so pleasurable, you can take them away. No. But these, leave these. So if we want to be sincere devotees, we have to have the courage to, you know, put our lives in the hands of Krishna, to put our head under Krishna's lotus feet and accept what Krishna, this is the test of our sincerity, to accept what Krishna wants us to go through, whatever that may be, with full faith and full confidence that this is the best thing for me. So these are some thoughts on this particular verse. I'll stop here. Any comments or question? Yes?
Well, it's very nice class. We know the subject of the gopis is pretty delicate. Srimati Radharani is considered the foremost of gopis and the highest recipient of Krishna's love. But the other, there are different categories of devotees, gopis, different categories. But are they also, recipient of intimate association with Krishna? I don't know if you quite get what I'm saying. Like Srimati Radharani is the foremost of the gopis. And she is pretty intimate with Lord Krishna. But the other gopis, are they? They're not in that category, right?
No. They're all very intimately related to Krishna. That's being stated here. But of all of them, Srimati Radharani is the most intimate, no? But most, just like on the transcendental platform, everything starts with complete. No, there's complete, more complete, and most complete. And even most complete cannot be most because it's always increasing. So, but Srimati Radharani, what is her special position? Her special position is stated at the end of Antilila and Chaitanya Charitamrita. Her special position is that she says, even though I want you exclusively for myself, and she exhibited that in the Rasa dance by leaving, because she was seeing Krishna's with everybody else and not exclusively with me, so if he wants to dance with them, let him dance with them. No. But then she says, but Krishna, if you want to be with someone, no, even though I don't like it, no, that you want to be with someone else, if that will make you happy, I will go and bring that gopi to you. Because he's talking about gopi, he's not talking about, you know, somebody else. I will bring that person to you. And even though that creates unhappiness in my heart, if that unhappiness is your happiness, then my unhappiness becomes my happiness. So that is a special position of Radharani. That she's positioned very special.
Thanks.
When speaking of relatives and, you know, dear ones like that, I remember when I first became aware, maybe, I can't remember if I was initiated yet, when my sisters was getting married, so temple president, I went around and said, well, you can go to the wedding, but you can't go to the reception, because they're going to be serving wine and drinking alcohol. So I was like, okay, you know, so how I did it, you know, they were like, what? So anyway, my question is, I've seen it done both ways, where someone completely knows and have no contact at all with their relatives. You know, on the other hand, you know, people who keep in touch enough and it seems to help them. You know, some of them can be ladies or they become vegetarians, they're favorable. And maybe there's no right or wrong in terms of this, because the people that are completely renounced, they will what is giving you the benefit? If you can just say something about it.
Well, to give up one's connection with relatives, that's called sannyas. No? So sannyasis are, you know, Prabhupada gave that example. No? He said, he was asked, well, what about your wife? I cannot see her. No? So that's what it means. But even sannyasis in our movement, for the benefit of the family members, and I'm included in that, no? We may visit them, no, and because although they can't understand, he took sannyas, he can't talk to me, no. He can't sit down with me. I'm his sister, but he can't sit down with me because it says in Srimad Bhagavatam, you can never sit down alone, even with your sister, mother, or dog, you know. It's like, these are statements that emphasize the importance of always maintaining the proper attitude. And what to speak of, you know, devotees who are grihastha, you know, even brahmacharis, if they, you know, on the one hand, you don't want to spend too much time. Of course, if they're Vaishnavas, then, you know, of course you can associate unlimitedly. And if they're not Vaishnavas, we should keep a cordial, friendly relationship, try to encourage them, try to, you know, let them see that devotees are normal, you know. But, you know, sometimes I've seen that people develop the attitude, you know, like exclusive, you know, I have the exclusive duty of trying to save my family members, you know, and what about everybody else? You know? Otherwise, don't become so absorbed in it, especially if they have bad habits, that one spends too much time with them, because that association inevitably weakens our devotional service. And I mean, I feel it when I visit my sister sometimes for a day or two, that just, you know, and they're nice people, but according to material estimation, you know. But, you know, some of their habits, immediately they'll sit down, turn on the TV, you know, and there's this vibration coming, and, you know, and they'll talk about, and especially family members, they really don't, you know, as the Bible says, no one is a prophet in his own land. So what to speak of your family members? Generally speaking, there are some exceptions. Generally speaking, they consider you to be so-and-so and not Krishna Das. So you know, it's just, I always recommend a balance. You know, a balance of, you know, keeping a nice relationship. You know, we can't deny natural feelings. You know, and Prabhupada said that so many times, that naturally one is attached to, what to speak of your children, your parents. That's a natural attachment. You know? And it's a duty, in one sense, to take care of one's family member, you know, mother, you know, especially, I know, where I work in Latin America, you know, the family bonds are a little stronger, like in India or in China, you know. Family tradition is very strong. And if somebody's mother is, you know, I was told by the devotees in China that if somebody's mother is sick, forget it, you know, they're going home and taking care of their mother, no matter what their service is, you know, until the mother is, because, so this is natural, no. It's natural, it's considered by the, in the external world, dharma. So if we don't do these things, we take on the aspect of a cult, you know, that, you know, you can't see these people, you can't do this. And so, but a devotee understands that too much association with mundane people, even though they may be family members, also can be detrimental to their devotional kripa. So a nice balance should be there. That's how I understand it.
Thank you so much for coming, Maharaj, and we're very happy that you're here, and want you to come often, please. Thank you, Krishna. I was just thinking the last thing you said about relationships with non-devotees, and it is always, as you said, it's a balance, and I was thinking of something that I heard that was attributed to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, when we have to associate with non-devotees, because he was a judge, you know, through work and family like that, He said, we can associate with them, but we don't give our heart. He says, we save our heart for the devotees. So I thought that was a nice way of looking at it.
Yeah. He also said that we associate with them. Oh wait, we let them associate with us, but we don't associate with them.
First to quote in a couple of verses that however you reciprocate with me, I reward you accordingly. But then he told the gopis that even in the day of Brahma, I cannot repay you for your selfless service unto me. So please be satisfied by your own glorious activities. So we're not on the level of the gopis or any of these great devotees, but we can try to become more selfless in our service. And in that way we can follow the gopis by trying to become more absorbed in Krishna. The gopis, they were feeling that Krishna's lotus feet would be pricked by pebbles as he walked in the forest, and they feared that the breasts were too hard to place Krishna's feet on, and they were constantly thinking, oh, you know, Krishna might be pricked by pebbles, but the ground is so hard. So they had this level of love, whereas our service is more thinking, I'd like Krishna to reciprocate with me in this way and help me out in this way, or supply me with this. We're on that type of level, but we can aspire to follow in the footsteps of the gopis in this way.
Yeah, good point. We can also at least ask Krishna if he's going to supply us with something, it'd be for our devotional service. At least that much, even if I'm on that platform. Here's a question over here.
So, pride disappears just by chanting the holy name, or we have to do something else to, pray?
Should we think of something else when we're chanting the holy name?
No, in what way? I have to doubt. If pride disappears only by chanting the holy name, or is it a way that pride can increase by chanting the holy name? Or is that?
Pride. If we have pride, if it will disappear only by chanting the holy name? Well, by chanting the holy name, it may not disappear also. No? Depends on how you chant the holy name. No. If you chant in a humble state of mind, yes, it will work against our pride. But if we chant and we think, let everyone see how I'm chanting, no. Let everyone see how I'm offering obeisances. Let everyone see how humble I am, no. And so then we can be proud. I many times make the point, you can be proud of being humble, no. Just see how humble I am. So we have to not only write chanting, of course that's the main thing, but our chanting becomes offenseless by hearing, you know, and understanding how to chant, you know, and by serving selflessly, and then our chanting becomes more pure. So by service, by remembering Krishna, by hearing about Krishna, then our chanting can achieve that state of being prideless, you know, or bring us to a prideless state. Everything's intertwined, you know, in devotional service. One thing depends on another. Okay?
Hare Krishna. First, I related to something that you said one time we were out in Hainan, and It was when you were mentioning how Radharani was saying, you know, I can't forget you, let alone to meditate on you, to remember you. And around how long some guy just started yelling at us, he wasn't around the room. He was just, oh my God, Hare Krishna, I can't get Krishna out of my head ever since I met you. And he was like trying to run away from us. And I just thought how funny and how lucky he was to always think of Krishna, even though he didn't want to. But at the moment when I talk about giving up something for Krishna, I can't think of this one author's name that I've read, and it talks about the pain bottle and how people are attached to things that have occurred to them in the past, whether it be an illness, a disease, abuse, anything that's happened to them, and they get really stuck in the mind. I guess, you know, I've talked to so many people and I see how they don't know how to let that go. Even though we're chanting, associating, it still carries heavy on them. And to be able to give up that fear or that pain body and be able to surrender fully to Krishna. Any words on that?
About that? Yes?
Yeah.
Just like if you cut yourself, it leaves a scar, no? And chanting Hare Krishna won't make the scar go away. No? So also if we get cut psychologically, however that may be, abused, mistreated, misunderstood, whatever it may be. No? Certainly the holy name has the power to make it go away. No? Certainly Krishna consciousness has the power to overcome anything. But many times I make the point that, you know, most people need a certain degree of comfort in order to perform devotional service properly. So that much comfort that you need to help you serve Krishna is acceptable. And then also whatever we need parallel and supporting our devotional service. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. And of course the Bhagavatam says that that bhakti cannot be produced by austerities or by knowledge, by the pursuit of knowledge. But it can be, you know, it can help. It can create a favorable atmosphere. So if we have an unfavorable atmosphere due to a psychological problem, disturbance or something, then to take care of that simultaneously is recommended. But one shouldn't think that that is, you know, that in itself will help me. Because usually what I've seen is that people who have psychological, and we all have some kind of psychological baggage, you know, either in the form of attachments or problems or difficulties or things that have happened. And, you know, if you just try to exclusively deal with that without including Krishna, then it just leads to another problem or difficulty. But to not attend, just like Srila Prabhupada said, I saw this quote a few days ago from Mother Kusha. She said that Prabhupada said that one should first of all take care of one's health, then one should chant the holy name. I forget the other two, but those two stuck in my mind. But Prabhupada said that about health. So, no, we can't think that devotional service, I mean, in the case of the gopis, they can abandon everything. Because, why? Because they became absorbed in Krishna. And everything else disappeared. You know? And if we can do that, then our psychological, if we have that degree of surrender and that degree of absorption, then whatever may be bothering us on any platform will go away. You know? But most of us are not on that platform, as Prabhu said, so we have to, you know, deal with things and just try to keep Krishna in the forefront. Make Krishna the priority. And then we have to deal with the other thing. What to speak of most people that have to deal with, you know, how do I take care of my family? How do I take care of myself? Meaning, take care of this instrument, which is the body. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, You have to take care of your body and you have to have sense gratification. You know, a certain degree of sense gratification is necessary for taking care of the body. Otherwise, without the material body, how can we, that's our instrument for approaching Krishna. You know. So, even sense gratification is recommended, meaning you have to eat something that's satisfying. Right? Unless you're like a totally detached from this material world, if you just eat like unsalted gruel every day, you know, then you know you won't be satisfied, and that will create a disturbance. So, anyway, some thoughts on
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Towards the end of your class, you were speaking about how we have to have courage to ask Krishna to remove our material desires. And I'm wondering where we can get that genuine courage from. Because sometimes I feel like maybe if like you're in a really ecstatic kirtan or something and the deities are looking really beautiful, I can say that. But most of the time, I feel fearful of really saying, oh, Krishna, remove all of the material desires, you know.
Yeah, most of us are like that. You know. But it comes from associating with people who actually are on that platform. Otherwise, attaining a higher degree of Krishna consciousness, the easiest way is to associate with those who have it. And then it becomes attractive. You know. If something becomes very attractive to us, then we're willing to do the austerities or the sacrifices to achieve it. But if something's not attractive to us, or something else is more attractive, then no. And usually attraction or you know habits, attraction come from association. No. Just like all of the things we have a taste for in life generally come from association. It's like if you take a small child, you give him a cigarette, you know. He's not going to say, oh, yeah, that's great. You know. But one can acquire that taste. Or, you know, you give somebody who's never taken alcohol, you give them a glass of alcohol, they'll spit it out and throw up. But you can acquire the taste. So practically speaking, all the tastes in this world are acquired. You know. And we have a natural taste for Krishna, which just has to be woken up. That's the special advantage. But it still has to be awakened by association. So I recommend association. And, you know, so association with those persons who have that taste and who have that level of Krishna consciousness. All right, Krishna.